Hello, all, and welcome to the Fantasy and Sci-Fi Fanatics podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Kuhl. Today, I have me a very special guest, Tim Hardy. Tim, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well, thanks, Daniel. Thanks for having me on.
Anytime, anytime. I know we've circled each other on social media quite a bit. I was glad to see, you could, pop in with the reviews or, your own work, in my podcast group. So that's been awesome. So really appreciate it. I feel like you and a few other people have really helped, up the content, like Alan, with his reviews in particular.
Yeah.
And I've had a lot of people, just so you know, it's not a waste of time because for either of you, because on top of me constantly, saving books or buying books because of you guys' reviews, I've had a lot of people contact me as well, saying like, "Oh, I saw Tim's review or saw Alan's review. I bought that author." So one of my buddies here locally who's in the group, he's done that a lot. So I really want to thank you both for that because that's been really helpful for me, just to get more content, and just to, see new authors and stuff. And it's hard to shop all the time, so it's like having an
Yeah.
algorithm from Amazon in my face all the time that I actually want instead of don't want. So it feels pretty good. So I really
Yeah.
appreciate
Yeah. I mean, the
that.
struggle to read books and things, it's very real, isn't it? And I'm quite a slow reader, actually. So when I do a review, I really want to make sure people actually read it, having gone to the trouble of doing that. So yeah, I mean, I publish them far and wide, but yeah, it's really good to have different places you can put them as well. So people, don't happen to pick them up on my feed, for example, in the book group, your group, that's good for me because, the whole reason why I wrote that review is so someone reads and picks up the book. So if that's working, that's obviously good.
No, it's super cool. That was one I like have to add tonight on Kindle. It's on my list for my calendar. I was like, knew I was gonna forget yesterday for today, so I put it down immediately. But yeah, that's really cool. Well, Tim, thank you, like I said, for coming on, and we'll get right down to it. What has your writing journey been like up until this point?
That's a really broad question. Well, I think yeah, one of I think really, really positive, but really, really long is probably the
That's fair.
summary of that. So I mean, I've probably been creative writing now. It must be coming up. Well, yeah, just over 20 years, but I think I only really became good about 15 years into that journey. So I think I think my story is there's hope for everybody. If if you love something that much and you want to put the time and effort in, that the craft does come with time and practice. But in my case, it did take quite a long time. So yeah, I'm an independently published author. Put out my first book, Hall of Bones, in 2020. But I've got a copy here. I should really wave it around as these people want to do on these podcasts. So that was a. Yeah, that was a sort of like, shall I do this? Shan't I do this kind of decision to to publish? And when I did, that book actually made the SPFBO finals the following year, and that really kind of helped snowball my writing journey. So it was very much, 15 years of very little actually happening that anyone would notice about. And then yeah, sort of from 2020 onwards, really, it sort of started slow. But yeah, I've been putting a book out a year since then, and yeah, it feels a very different place now. I feel. I feel really blessed I've done it because it's just opened up a whole community of, readers, obviously, podcasters, reviewers, people that love the worlds you create, and that's a real high, just getting that reaction. And obviously, networking with other authors, I think, and through them then discovering really good books to read as well that you've never heard of other than by moving in those circles. So yeah, it's been a really rewarding time the last 4 or 5 years, actually, and yeah, no regrets whatsoever about doing it.
My wife, I'm always like, oh, I gotta do some work. She's like, you're just going to talk to some friends about books. She's like, don't pretend it's work.
There's no judgment here. There's nothing wrong with that.
I'm like, that's fair. That's fair. I was like, people ask me all the time, like I was supposed to have another interview this week, and I was just like, I was just so tired from the time change. And then the author got over there like, hey, I'm like, don't even worry about it. I was like, my son has not been able to handle it. So you're one of like five interviews I was supposed to have. I had four, and then we rescheduled for like Monday. So I think I got like four more next week, but it doesn't feel like I'm actually doing anything because I enjoy, talking to you guys about your books, your writing journey. I always get something out of it. I think if you're not, maybe tweak your podcast a little bit, right? Like I was talking to Stephen Arian yesterday, and I got a lot out of, just our conversation. So I always think it's really cool to, like you said, like to be able to connect with the community. I really just want to put some books out there, really for myself, but I'm fed so many people that are like, oh, I'm just interested in your idea, or or how you do something. And I'm like, I get that, because I always find it interesting to read everybody else's books to see how they're, taking something and, doing something cool with it. So I agree, it's definitely a rewarding thing, but yeah, definitely time consuming. I
Yeah,
totally
hugely.
feel, once I get good at some point, or I feel like it is, I'll let you know in about 10 years. So I definitely feel that one too. But yeah, that's
Yeah, I
awesome.
think that's a really good point, actually. All of us, all of us, some people are just naturally gifted and will just like bang, they will just do it straight away. Other people, I think I'm a slow learner, if I'm perfectly honest with you.
Yeah, no,
And
if you.
I would say if you are doing the sort of writing journey, you don't expect to be good straight away. But equally, don't I would say don't release unless you are absolutely confident you're ready. So I was agented before I released, and actually my agent's John Jarrold, who's been in the sort of fantasy business for 50 plus years in different guises, and quite a I don't know, the classic wise mentor type relationship, which has really it has really helped. And I think what I was doing in sort of 2010, 2011, up to 2015, he was a really helpful person in terms of just doing sort of development edits and just working on my material basically, and just moving up that level. And it's really surprising actually, sort of like you can get 90% of the way there, but the magic and how the book really works is in that final 10, 5, and 1%, and that's where the craft is. So the creativity is the 90%, but the craft is getting that to that final those final sort of development stages, really. But yeah, I think it's I think it's one of those things where you definitely when you've got it right. And as you get, I've definitely found now I found it easier to write, and I'm writing more quickly, even though it's taking me longer to write books because I'm doing more and more other things like being on podcasts and book reviews and all those kind of things that kind of come with the space, really. But yeah, I mean, I think it's one of those things where it's a craft that takes its time. You've got to take that feedback, I think, is the other thing. Share and work with other people, and being able to take criticism. All those things are really, really helpful if you want to become really good at doing it, basically. And even now, I think I'm still learning. I think if you have it with that sort of mindset, it's quite it makes it fresh, it makes it interesting to do, and keeps it interesting.
No, totally. I had Sarah Chorn help me out. I was like, I just need some help, and she was able to get me in, and a few months ago, and she handed me, she's like, I don't think it's quite ready, and she's like, I know it might not be nice, like the thing you want to hear, because it's going to delay scheduling and stuff like that. But she's like, I think you need like two more drafts, like at least a draft and a half. And I'm like, cool. I'm like, actually want people to read it. And then like Logan D. Irons helped me out as an alpha reader, H.L. Tinsley did. But they all three said pretty much the same thing, which was great to get, that feedback. Something here, but these things need to be, changed. And oh my God, Sarah's notes were just like, I feel like you had to pay for a, it was like paying for a master class, like on developmental editing. I was showing my friend, I was like, this is amazing. I was like, no wonder she's such a great writer. Like just her thoughts. That's what Stephen and I were talking about yesterday in our interview too, because he helped her with a New York Minute, which I love. And I kind of took a break too. He got his feedback right around the same time I did, like right after, I think right before. So I read his novella and I was like, I love this. And then he's like, oh yeah, Sarah helped me. And then I got these notes and things. And I got my notes after. I think it was like the next client after. And I was like, oh, I was like, this just isn't ready, because I know because of the notes, but and her feedback. But I love Stephen, novella so much that I was like, I want it to be like that. And it's not like that yet. So I totally get that. I was like, I'm just not at that level. So when you said 90 for the creative part and then that craft, people keep asking like, what's going on? I'm like, I am slogging through the craft because I've never gotten this far before, with publicating something. And it's like, I just don't know. So that inexperience is like, I'm having to create all these new experience out of it. It is a slog after a little bit, but
It's really difficult to learn that lesson, isn't it? Because obviously the whole point of writing is that you want to share it. That's kind of what most people, that's where most people are at, aren't they? And I've sort of so I finished the Hall of Bones series, the Brotherhood of the Eagle series. I've finished book four. That's out now, so that series is complete. And I wrote that fourth book, Broken Brotherhood, in 2023. So that's the 90%. Put it away for quite a few months and a few other things in 2024, and came back to it. So it's probably taken another effective. It's taken so that book came out in November 2024. It's taking basically another 11 months to do the final 10%, and that's
Yeah.
going through probably about, one development draft, and then probably about three, two, no, three drafts of like just refinement of just trying
Yeah.
to get that final 1% exactly, because especially with finishing the series, you want it to be.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah.
So I think it's really important to, that what you're talking about, that first book, right, the really good first impression. And obviously
Yep.
working with Sarah Chaughan is a smart move because she is a very talented editor. I've worked with her on the Anatomy of Fear project, and she was instrumental in turning my story from, good to really good. I'm really happy with what she did on that. So yeah, it's a long process, and the breaks, the gaps are just as important sometimes actually as the working and the drafting. So I think having a good 3 or 4 months away from Broken Brotherhood for me was really good in clearing my head. So I went back to it, and it felt like a fresh book again. So I think,
Yeah.
and why aren't you working it all the time? Sometimes it's not the right thing to do. In fact, it's the worst
Yeah.
possible thing you could do is to go straight back into it. And that feels, again, instinctively, it's quite hard to get into that habit at first.
Yeah, I have like two I had I was having such a hard time after I don't even know what draft. I think I'm on draft 5 right now. But I had like 3.5, I think, and I had just finished, and then I just needed a break. So one of my
Yeah.
friends, like a year and a half ago, he suggested, he's like, I do like two things. He goes, I do two things I'm constantly working on, and then I have a fun thing. So he goes, I like do 2.5. And he's like, this is my main one, and this is like the thing I do when I need a break from that one or in between, till I finish that. And he's like, then I just do a fun thing. So I have like a funtasy, as I call it, like a fun fantasy, like dark fantasy. It's like a D&D thing. So I was doing that as like my 0.5, or just like whenever I have time, I'm just, if I need a warm up or writer's block or whatever. And then I have something else I'm editing right now, like another novella, like a separate genre and stuff. And that's helped me out a lot. I'm kind of stuck on that one right now because I'm like stuck on the first one. So I'm just stuck editing, but it's fine because it's like stuff that Logan and like Holly and Sarah have said. It's already transferring over, so I'm definitely improving the other thing I'm working on. And I think like hoping by Monday I'll feel like ready to go again. I had to like rework a lot of weird things, and I felt like I wasn't ready to write, if that makes sense, until I reworked out the characterization and stuff. I had some tropes and stuff I needed to hit more, but yeah, that ever since I did that though, it's been about, yeah, I guess now it's been about 2.5 years, so it must have been before that draft. But like I had finished it, and then I needed something to do because I wasn't writing. My wife's like, "Oh my God, our son's gonna be born soon, and you have like nothing accomplished, that you were hoping." So I was like, "I'm so glad my friend said that." So now I have like a bunch of other things, where like if I really wanted to or had the time after this next novella is finished, I could, just go and finish this rough draft, or do draft 2 or 3 or something. So it kept me working and writing. So it wasn't like I was writing every day or felt like I had to, but I wanted to, to do, further like a different project. So I might spend like 2 or 3 days on one if I needed a break, and then I might take 2 days off entirely, and then I'll probably go back to, like my primary. So I don't know. I just think it's all about trying to figure out what works for you. And for me, like the more I don't write, the longer it takes me to write again. So even if it's like editing or something, I'm just trying to, I just find it fun, to sit when my son's chilling or something, or in between an activity and 15, I just like the writing sprints or editing sprints for 15, 10, 15. But yeah, it's been difficult to find what's worked, I think, for me. And I think that's part of craft too, is like, right, like trying to figure out what works for you. And that's like what Steve and I talked about, was like he had a part with a New York Minute where it wasn't really working. And then he like twisted it in a way where it worked for him and was able to tell the story. So I think it's, it really comes down to, how you're writing, but also what you're writing. So I think it's always interesting to talk to different authors to try and, get those kind of tips and stuff, and to figure out what's working for you, because you know what's working for you, right? Because you've, done it, and you have, series finish and stuff. But I was even with series finished, right? Like when you go into your next series, that's like a whole different thing, right? So that's already adding to, your knowledge of your craft, but you might be doing the next series, or something completely different than how Mike Gall or Fletcher starts his next series, So I don't know. It's just always interesting to see how people are doing different things, because you just never know, I think, what's going to work for you, or better your stories or writing. So I think it's always really interesting, but.
I mean, I think you, like I said before, it's like this constant learning process, and I
Yep,
think you've got to
exactly.
you've got to accept it changes. So when I was younger, so at this 20 years, I've never been a write every day person. I think for some people that if they don't write, they have almost like an existential crisis. It's not always well, for other people it works really, really well. But I was more of a I would write in the evenings. So I was a night owl. I'd sort of sit down about 9 p.m. At the laptop, get up, and that's really how Hall of Bones was written. It was written in the night, and I started off as doing this when I had young children, and then, now they're sort of basically adults, so it's gone the other way. And actually, I think probably because I've become more proficient in the craft, and also because I'm older, night writing doesn't work for me in quite
Yes,
the
I know
same.
that feeling.
I can do edits and stuff like that if I've got all the finished thing, but getting the creative, first draft, I'm now much more of a weekend writer, and my best peak writing time is now in the morning. So it's effectively flipped completely, partly because of getting a slightly more, I suppose, work is more demanding than it was 20 years ago. I'm in a more senior job, for example, so I'm just more tired in the evening. So I think it's about recognizing what works for you, but also, life will change. Writing's a long career, and you it's one of those things you'll be doing in your 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, all those sort of things. Your life will change, so you need to adapt sometimes your habits. I've certainly found I've had to do that really. And I guess the other thing that kind of made me, you're right about finishing a series. That was interesting because it's a very different technique to writing Hall of Bones. It was very much just chuck every idea you can at that novel, and pruned a little few of those things out again. But most of it, I just chucked as much in as I could do. And with the sequel, Sundered Souls, did exactly the same thing. So every idea went in the melting pot, and I threw all the ideas. And I got to book three because this was a trilogy at this point rather than a four book series. Got to book three, and I thought, there's a problem here. And the problem is, I cannot possibly complete all these story arcs from books one and two in another volume. So I had to start in book three. I almost didn't finish that series because I didn't know what to do with that book. Again, my skill level and craft level got to a certain point, but it wasn't ready. And I probably took a year. It would have been a year I took away from the series at that point to do something totally different. And when I came back to it, I realized this has got to be plotted in a totally different way. You've got to start closing things down. So I did actually introduce new characters in that third book in the series, Lost Gods, but they were introduced because they were characters I needed to then complete the arc for the whole shebang. And so book three was actually very, very difficult to write. Book four was a lot more straightforward because of that I'd really worked out by book three exactly what was going to happen, and I had that glide path through, but totally different set of skills and techniques for that I hadn't really even realized I'd need, which sounds crazy now I say it out loud, but at the time I'd just not been there before. So I think now, going into and you're right, 2025, there'll be new projects and things I want to start thinking about. I'll be coming at that from a very different mindset. If I'm starting a project, I want to know where that's ending, because I think knowing where you're going is really, for me, is really, really important. I'm more of a pantser type writer, basically. I think knowing that end point, what you're working towards, is pretty crucial, really.
No, I totally agree. That's where, like, I had a few, I have some prequel novellas I'm working on. It's just been easier financially and just like time wise. And I just had people that are like, I just had a character, like my character told me, oh yeah, I was like reading an article. They're like, oh, that's the name of book one. This is what happened to me in it. And I'm like, for 3 years, I've been trying to figure out how to fix the Wild Hunt into this book. And I needed a couple other things and it just all came together at one time. But it's going to be really fun because I have the prequel trilogy, like one of them, and then everything's set 2 years in and like in the, like, then that book one's like 2 years after that. And I'm like, how did this guy become a monster hunter? He wouldn't tell me like book one, but he told me this story. So I was like, I guess I'll just write this. So, but I'm gonna put it into like one anthology. But like Steve and I talked about this yesterday, where it's like I kept thinking, and he did this with New York Minute, where I was thinking it was gonna, I could just make it one book. And this character's like, no, like the story is here. It's a novella. This one's here, this one's here. And then I came up with like a marketing tactic for it where I was like, okay, I'm like, I could sell as like a prequel novella trilogy, put stuff together, keep it separate, what I do, whatever with the novellas I want with the newsletter and stuff. But yeah, I agree with you. It's like, it's hard, right, at times to figure out like exactly. I don't know. I've talked to so many people where I had a couple of things I was plotting out or planning for different series or trilogies. And I'm thinking like, maybe this is a book four. I was like, maybe this is a duology. And I'm so glad I talked to people like you who have that experience, because then when I'm planning ahead of time, because I do need a discovery right still, but I do need like an endpoint. I need like check-ins, or waypoints, as one of my guests said last season. But yeah, I totally agree with you. I need to know like where I'm going, and then things change along the way, with the route and stuff, like kind of like a vacation. I know I'm getting there, but we always leave ourselves time to, stop for the weather or something fun or whatever. So I think that's the same way with writing. But yeah, it's interesting to find, like for yourself, right, where like what works and what doesn't. So I'm still kind of doing that with novella one.
Two competing sort of things going. I think everyone
Yeah,
is as a
exactly.
combination of the plotter and the pantster
Yep.
in them, actually. I think, I wouldn't want to write, so my technique is probably more plot level ready, in that I will write down broadly what I think the key, like I say, the waypoints are. So roughly in chapter X, Y, and Z, this will happen, and this will happen. So again, I've got a thread, and I find that if I've got a vague roadmap, like you say, it's great. You then wander off into the countryside or go into the woods. And I think for me, the bit I really like is like when you just mentioned when the character speaks to you. And for anyone that's not a writer, that sounds a little bit weird. But when you're a writer, I mean, and it's just it's like a light bulb moment, and they just, then at that point the story can go anywhere, can't it? Which is quite, maybe quite entertaining. So like Jury for me is my the guy spoke to me kind of character. So he's not the main character, but he's got a really important story arc that kind of shows, trying not to give too much away here, spoilers. He's got an interesting story arc. But that character started off as a head in a sack.
Oh, interesting.
So he was dead in book one, and it's so he was na this boy is named as Jury, but he's already dead at that point. I thought they're a really good name. Why did I waste it on that? On that? And it was the name that made me start to think of the character,
Oh,
and he
interesting.
kind of grew from this. I removed him from the sack, and somebody else with a much less impressive name went into the sack and did what had to be done. And then, yeah, Jerry's story just kind of like wove its way through the series in a way that, that was never in any of the early drafts or any of the early plotting. And yeah, I think now he's probably one of my favorite characters in the whole series, actually.
Well, it's interesting. I had one, she told me after 14 years and I had two drafts done, and she goes, "I'm not in this book." I was like, "To
What?
hell you're not in this book." And then the guy that was in there, that they're like kind of like a pair, and he goes, "They're in their story arc," and he goes, "I'm not in this book either." And I'm like, "What are you guys?" I'm like, they're like behind me, like, "What are you guys talking about?" I'm like, "You're in this book." And then the guy goes, "No, I'm actually this character." And I'm like, God, that sounds cooler. I was like, why did you even remotely put that into my head? And then she was like, yeah, I'm actually like this character, but you can keep us together in this other book. I'm like, oh my God. So I completely rewrote that entire book from their perspective with their part of the story. And my friend was like, this is so much better. I'm like, I know. And it took forever and it still needs more work, but it was such a better idea. So I was glad I listened to them. But at the same time, I'm like, hope they never try that again, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I can remember The Lost Gods, not quite as dramatic as that, but actually it was quite, yeah, I'm trying to think, wonder what it, yeah, so I'm delving back into a very troubled period of my past. I think I must have suppressed the memory more than I realised. Basically, I chopped about 50,000 words out of that book.
Oh, wow.
So it's words that I just simply can't use anywhere else. They're just, when I, now I'm starting that I can't remember what it was. So some of it was character inconsistencies and just things that weren't working, but there are other bits of storyline that just were just not necessary and just had to go on the bonfire. I also had to rewrite to reposition certain plot pieces, and so the book sort of was, I think it came out about 180,000 words. I had to cut it by 50,000 words to get rid of the stuff that wasn't working, but then I had to write another 100, had to write another 50,000 words back in. But it ended up the same length despite being massively edited and revised. And I thought, you've written again, when you'd make those sort of those things happen to you, you think, I've written another novel here, basically. That's the level of time and effort I've put in by getting off on the wrong foot. So again, I think for me, it just re it reinforces the need to have a really clear set of ideas of what you're trying to do. But even that can't entirely help you if you then if the character voice isn't right. And I think that's what you just described, that you had the wrong voices for your story, didn't you, effectively? And I think once you realise that's happening, it's a really, you've really got to deal with that, brutal as it is, because otherwise the book just won't work, will it? It's that sort of, there's a reason that the characters are telling you that.
Yeah, and like in my first novella, I have like my monster hunter, he's like a marine, and I have a secondary character. Well, I thought she was a secondary character. She told me a while back, she's like, I'm actually like basically like his partner. And I'm like, okay, that is cooler. Like, I was just gonna have her pop up and then kind of be like a, kind of like in the Dresden Files, like John Carpenter. I was gonna have her pop in and out, like help sometimes. She's like, nope, I'm like more into this story. And like my second novella for it, like I already pretty much wrote the whole thing. I have like the first like 60% done, and everything's like plot and outlines. And I was like, okay, I'm like, well, now I gotta like go back and do that after I'm done with the completely done with the first one. But everything, like you said, like everything is like improving the overall story. So I'm actually super excited to see when I'm done with both, particularly once I've, gotten better at craft, because I'm really excited for the third one. Because the whole point is, right, is to get people to read one, two, and three for this arc to figure out who this person is and how he came to this life, but then the other characters are in the story with him. But I don't know, it's been long process. My friends are like, oh, you're supposed to be done with this and that by now. I'm like, but I'm not. But at the end of the day, again, I always think of quality, and I'm like, I know I'm getting better because it sucks writing right now. Like I'm like, oh my God, am I done yet for certain parts and things? But it is fun, I think, to be able to look back and, be like, oh, I improved on this,
Yeah,
quite a bit. So it's
it's a
interesting.
challenge, isn't it? And I enjoy that challenge. But I think what you're describing there, you're not alone. You're not unusual. Because I wrote, I sort of didn't write. I went in straight with novel length writing. I didn't try short story. I didn't try novella. I just thought, you know what? I'm gonna write an epic fantasy novel chonker at 200,000 words. How hard can it be? And the answer is it's very, very difficult indeed. And so I've battled with that novel from 2005 to finished it in 2011. So it was about 5 year project on and off with a few other things going on. I submitted that to my agent. I submitted that to John Jarrell because at that point I was indie wasn't where it is now back then. And so I was very much thinking in the trap mindset for getting books out there. And John turned it down. He sent me a really lovely email back quite quick. It was quite, he said, I can see imagination in what you've done here, but it just doesn't feel modern. And I think I know what he means now looking back. He said, have a read of some of these other authors who are current now. So he mentioned Joe Abercrombie, Mark Lawrence, and I think it was Scott Lynch as well, and sort of said, pick up the, have a read of them, and then look at your book and see what you think. So I'm trying to remember now which one I actually picked up first. I think it was probably Joe Abercrombie, and it, the Blade itself, First Law trilogy, one of my all-time favorite fantasy series. And just those first few pages, I realized that the novel I'd written was, it just was dead in comparison to what I, Joe's words and his voice just leapt off the page, and it was just, I'd never read anything like it. And I think that's probably because my sort of like fantasy origins and influences and things were rooted in the stories of the 70s and the 80s,
For sure.
and the genres have moved on massively. So I kind of came to the fairly painful decision. I thought that novel is just not good enough, and it never will be. So that was my trunk novel that written over 5 years. It's gone. I kept the world, so I kept the mythology. I kept the map. but I sort of relocated the action to a different part of the sort of fantasy world I based it in, and that's when I started writing Hall of Bones. And having read more widely, when I started writing Hall of Bones, I realized I was onto something. It was just different. The project felt completely different. And you just have that moment, like you said, with your characters, or like, get the right character, the right viewpoint. Suddenly, it all working. And so that book took about 3.5 years to write, so 11 to 15. I reapplied to John because he was still the agent I really wanted to represent me, and he picked me up off the back of Hall of Bones. So his rejection of that early work was actually really, really important for me because it put me on to who I should be looking at as my reference points. I probably had John Gwynne into that mix as well, really. Robin Hobb, she's a been a massive influence on my writing as well. I just knew I was just at a different level. Still wasn't as good as I am Now I don't think. I think Hall of
Yeah.
Bones is your debut is never going to be as good as the books you write subsequently, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It should be. But yeah, in a way, John rejecting me was probably the best thing that ever happened because he rejected me with some really good feedback. And I think if you get, like we said before, if you get people involved in your close circle that you trust and they can give you that kind of feedback, they will help you move on and progress. I think for any writer looking at starting this now, you need to find a supportive writing group where people aren't idiots. They do know what they're talking about, and there's a bit of psychological safety there, basically, that you can sort of, ask for criticism, receive it in a professional way, but then learn how to use that to your advantage as well. So being rejected by John was probably the best thing that ever happened to me, actually.
Oh, that's awesome. Why well, try to tell people like I have J.R. Wise, he's helping me out. He's my military consultant. So once I'm done, because I'm like, my guy's a veteran. I'm like, I need a veteran. He's like, he was so funny. He goes, I just want you to know ahead of time that I'm gonna tell you exactly what I think. And I'm like, that's good, because I'm already taking way longer than I like should. I was like, I had a new job last year. I'm like, I just don't have time to waste to for people, you know. I was like, I accept feedback really well. I was like, tell me what you think. It was good, bad, and you know, I was like, that's totally fine. So I was like, I just don't have time for, you know, for fluff. I was like, I'm just trying to get this thing, you know, as good as possible, you know, as quickly as I can and get it out there. So I definitely appreciate people that give feedback. I always tell people, they're like, what do you think? I'm like, you got to be able to accept feedback no matter what, particularly I think if you're an author. I'm like, because that's the only way that people, you know, they have to read your stuff, right? And then tell you what they think. Otherwise,
Yeah,
you're doing
absolutely. Feedback and critique comes with the territory. And I think,
yeah.
once released, there's no going back, or
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
virtually no going back. I did have some quality control issues with the Hall of Bones in terms of, because I self-edit because I'm crazy like that. It's one of the reasons why my projects take a bit longer. And I thought, I read it once and thought, well, there can't be any more typographical errors in that now, can there? Published it. And the first few reviews did highlight some issues. And I looked, and it was every chapter there was an error. And I realized then, my God, you really, if you're going to do this, you've got to do it, to be a proper,
Yeah.
professional to do it. And it was a real awakening moment for me. So I now audio edit my books once I've, it's part of my technique. So I
Oh, yeah.
eyeball it and do all that sort of thing. But then I put the headphones on, and the headphones are really good because they read exactly what's there, not
Yeah.
what you've written. And that was a game changer for me. I do think now, I'm pretty com there will always be a typo in every book that's ever published. There always will, regardless of the route it's
Yeah.
gone through. But I do think, I've got the quality control side of this now. I've learned a lot more in the last few years, and that those side of things, I've now got ways to sort of like handle that, which I didn't before.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's but yeah, I think getting input, getting feedback, and then, just taking the time it needs. This is not a quick process, is it?
Yeah.
It definitely isn't.
Yeah, if you want immediate results, do something else. That's what I always tell people. I'm like, this is a slow burn. Definitely rewarding and fun, but definitely a slow burn. So yeah, if you want something quick, yeah, maybe, or maybe write smaller things. But even then, I think like with short stories and stuff, like depending on what you're writing, like it could take just as long. So yeah, I definitely agree with that. That's funny. But we mentioned a little bit already. I just want to make sure I can hear, like, I got feedback a while back from somebody, and they're like, for the podcast, they're like, you just geeked out on writing. They're like, we wanted to hear more about this person's book. So I'll make sure we have enough time to actually talk about, you know, your books. So and we talked already, Ray, about genre, epic fantasy. But in terms of just explaining to our audience, you know, what is the Brotherhood of the Eagle about? And maybe like how you came up with this idea. So
I'll start with what it's about, because the other question is a really short answer.
that's fair.
So Brotherhood of the Eagle, it's effectively, I suppose, if you imagine the TV show Game of Thrones combined with the TV show Vikings, that's basically the vibe and the aesthetic. So it's like a it's I call it Viking inspired rather than Norse inspired, because it doesn't have the Norse gods in or anything like that. It's a fantasy
Oh.
world, but they're like an analogous to the Viking culture of old, basically. So, and it's about, effectively, it's about a conflict that takes place within the sort of like the clan lands that are ruled by different chieftains and rulers. So it's a post-apocalyptic setting. A very advanced civilization's fallen back, and in the Brotherhood of the Eagle setting, when the book starts, people have actually rejected the gods, they've rejected magic, they're trying to go back to an older, more pure time. And some of those things they've got right, and some of those things they've got wrong. So it's about effectively, it starts off as more of a political thing about the clans vying for supremacy and trying to outdo each other. But then there's a magical element to the story that sort of like starts to build and build. So it kind of starts off very much like, I think a lot of people have said that the early book in particular is very much like Robin Hobb, in terms of the political side of things. And then a bit like Game of Thrones, you start to see the fantasy elements, the magical elements start to build, and they become progressively more important with each book as you go along. So that there's a bit of a pivot in that first book when what you think it's about, that's quite deliberate, isn't actually what it's about. So it's, I suppose, if you like, you know, sort of coming of age tropes. I mean, the central character is a character called Hrothgar, who's the second son of the chief of the Riesberg clan, so a noble, well educated, quite competent, but he's the supporting role for his elder brother and his father. He's not the main man, and he won't inherit the kingdom, basically. So he's got a very much his life mapped out, and then basically I just all hell lets loose. And yeah, his life goes in a very different direction. And most of the novel, the series actually is about how Hrothgar deals with everything changing from what he expected to be his life to what his life then becomes. So yeah, trying to massively avoid spoilers there. But yeah, like Game of Thrones, Vikings show, if you think, if you like John Gwynne's style of writing or Robin Hobb, I think you probably find there's something to enjoy in the Brotherhood of the Eagle, basically.
That's cool.
Where did the idea come from? I think it came from a lot of those reference points were that I mentioned previously. They've obviously affected my writing, but that idea was a bolt from the blue. So, as I said before, in 2011, I'd set aside the previous project and binned it. Thought, well, I need to write something else, which was quite, pressure point, because I've been writing the other novel for so long. And I honestly didn't know what I was going to do. And then I was on holiday, in actual fact, I had my laptop open, trying to come up with an idea. And it suddenly, why don't you move it to a Norse setting? Was the first idea. And then Hrothgar, a bit like we said before, the character talks to you. Hrothgar came on the page. And I thought, you don't want the hero in this story to be just everything you read in every other fantasy story. So don't make him center stage. Move him off to the left and give him a bit of angst and anxiety about who is telling him what to do. So he actually loses a bit of agency in a sense because I've taken that step to the left in that. And yeah, as soon as that voice and that character got going, the whole thing just snowballed. And the first half of that book just like flew out. Yeah, really, really positive writing experience. But it was, although I describe myself as a plotter now, that first half of the book was pretty much written with absolutely no idea what I was doing whatsoever. And then I realized I needed to plot again to work out how I was going to end that first book and where the series was starting to move to. So it kind of went from there, really.
Oh, that's really interesting. You are, I think you are right though, right? Like usually it would be like the, I don't know, like if we talked about Vikings, so like be like Ragnar, right, is like that main character. So and then Bjorn, right, like firstborn son. So I do think it's interesting, that you talked about how he's a supporting role for his brother. So there are different expectations. So I definitely think that that's really cool. I love, I know some people are like, I don't like my expectations subverted, but I have seen so many people do that so well recently. With not even books that have come out like this year, but like within the last couple of years, particularly with like Spiffbow, like yours, and that have just done just an amazing job. And I have one recently where I'm reading and I'm like, oh, I thought this was gonna happen. And then I got to the next chapter and wham, it just like hits you in the face. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like. It was really, really surprising. And I had a fun time because then after that, it was just like we were just going, and the character's like, come on, we gotta go. So it's like, all right, where are we going? And then we just went into the story. So I think that's really cool. But I like how you said, like Norse inspired, but like Viking, right, in this setting. So I think it's really cool to see how people, have taken that type of inspiration and then use it in a fantasy setting. I think those kind of things make really cool cultures. And then really cool problems, and then unique characters who have to solve them. So I'm just kind of curious that maybe like what were some of the things that you kept in terms of like the Viking inspired things, In particular, that you're like, okay, I'm going to keep, these are things that I absolutely need, whether it's for the world building or the story, to still feel as part of that aesthetic. I'm just kind of curious at what you particularly try to highlight.
Yeah, I mean it's a religion, definitely not. That was sort of went in the bin straight away because I was using the same world. It didn't have those influences basically. And so I think it was more the clothing, the type of weaponry. I think one of the things that makes the book work is people kind of know what it's about because they've got that reference point. So it just just there are long hauls, long ships, the whole the cult. I always think with the Vikings, in some sense it was a primitive culture. They very much used what they had available, didn't they? It wasn't, but they were at the same time they made the most of it. So this is very much a trading area, but there's also raiding that goes on, which again that the Viking culture is obviously rooted in a lot of taking wealth for yourself. And that was an important strand about the fact that despite birth and privilege and all those sort of things, if someone is stronger, they can take from you what they want. And so the leader has to be able to actually resist that. And if they're not able to do that, they won't be the leader. So
Right
there's like an
line.
inherited side to this, but then there's also I think the Viking pragmatism almost that if you don't if you're not up to the job, you're asked to politely stand aside, and if you say no, they will chop your head off basically. So I think it's definitely not too much in terms of historical accuracy because I'm writing fantasy. Example, I put pubs and inns into my world. The Vikings didn't have them, but they're really handy from a narrative and plot point of view. So sometimes it's just easier to be, so I didn't feel constrained by that because it wasn't historical fiction, basically. For the most obvious carry thought forward that I use a really brilliant website called the Viking Answer Lady.com. And she's watched one of the things I really struggle with coming up with names at the beginning. Absolute nightmare. So she actually has documented all the names that are listed in the Icelandic and
That's
Viking sagas. And that was a really helpful thing because I think, again, it helped root the story in the place by taking names that were real names in the Viking culture. I tried to anglicize them just to make them easier to read and frankly to write. But again, I think that sort of aesthetic comes through very strong. So the naming conventions, son of, daughter of, but then also, you can get a given name that's given to you after your deeds and those kind of things, again, very much from the Viking culture. So I think lots of these things will feel very familiar to readers. And I think particularly when I was doing this in 2011, no one was writing Norse fantasy. I was ahead of my time. I published after that ship had sailed, basically. So it's so I think people are much more familiar with that type of genre of fantasy now as a result. So it's almost there's a bit of a comfort to going into something that kind of meets some of your expectations. Then I do like to play with that by, like you said, yeah, it does meet your expectations up to a point, and then it kind of it's really about something very different to what it seems like it's about at the start.
Oh, that's cool. Okay, like you and like Till the Holt Cult, like both, and like a couple other people, which I don't think it was still flooded, but it was interesting. It's always interesting to see when people have those kind of ideas, kind of at the same time. But it was so cool to see how you did yours, how she did hers, and there's like two other people. I don't know. It was kind of cool because I felt like, for as a reader, like oh, okay, yeah, like this is kind of neat, like it felt like it was kind of like just a small push within the genre to go back to like Viking inspired fantasy. Because I felt like so many people had done things, the Vikings TV show or whatever, but at the same time, like Viking fantasy, I think is like you were saying, is like way different, right? Or inspired is way different than historical fiction or historical fantasy. So I don't know. It was just cool to see. I was like, oh, that's an interesting idea. I didn't think to do that because I always think of like like the Mongolian fantasy. I want to do something like that, where it's like a different world, but they're like the Mongols, and I just think their society was so interesting, in history, and put them against the empire, I think is really cool. So I don't know. I think that was just a terrific idea on your part. I think that was really neat. I'm curious, like, so you came up with your own gods then for, so did you use some of the familiarity with the pantheon? Like this is like, God of Thunder, whatever, goddess of the heart, things like that. Or did you just kind of start from scratch or?
No, it started from scratch with this. So
Interesting.
kind of rooted in the so effectively. There's one God, so there's the creator who made all things. And so effectively where I suppose that the fantasy religion kind of comes in, it's more like there's a pantheon of minor deities that served him. So effectively all the minor deities, they're basically mirror images of each other. So, effectively kind of every, so you've got, I'm trying to think of a good example. So you've got, for example, gods of healing, but then you've got gods of sickness and disease. You've got gods of creation, and those sort of things. And then, gods of war, gods of laughter, love, hate, those kind of things. The fates come into this quite a bit. So there's Dynevilin, who's the effectively the goddess of good fortune, and Mischal, who's the goddess of misfortune, and those things are. So effectively, most of the deities, that they're all two sides of the same coin, or the polar opposite of each other. And the basic concept was that when the world was created, they were all effectively creation gods, and all were needed to fashion the world that was. That came about, the world of Amaran, where the story is set. But then, because they were the polar opposites, the very thing that was needed to create caused conflict. So actually, the gods in the end, there was a basically there was a god war, which led to the apocalypse, which led to the rejection of religion in the opening part of the story. So the gods have actually been banished. Well, I'd say that the gods have been banished, but there is a select group who didn't take part in the war who are still hanging around. So you've effectively
Oh,
got
interesting.
gods on one side, on the other side, that couldn't reconcile the differences and basically brought things to a crisis. Then you've got a third faction that didn't take part in that conflict and therefore weren't banished by the creator when things got to a head. And so that effectively enabled me to sort of rewrite the map a bit, really, in terms of that was the fantasy origin. And I haven't really gone into that too much. It's kind of like that's all ancient history that people refer to. But the idea is that the gods still influence things, but they do now, they now much more act through the mortals, through the human race and the dragon race, as was, and those sort of, so they're influencing, but they're not directly controlling in the way they were before. And again, for a lot of cultures, they want nothing to do with them. But I think the interesting thing was actually that religious element sort of crept back into the books as I was writing. So actually, in my world, there is a life after death. There is a space between life and death, for example. So there's Naven sort of occupy character. Naven occupies a space where he basically takes souls of people who have died, and they wait for final judgment in effectively a form of a thing inspired by Valhalla. That's probably the closest bit to the Norse gods, actually, is Naven's halls. So yeah, but gradually that sort of like whole pantheon becomes again more important. Certain gods become a bit more involved than perhaps they were at the beginning. So again, it starts off as almost like a society where God's been rejected, but then gradually, people's perspectives are widened and they realize the world isn't as simple as they'd like it to believe, as part of that, really. So it's yeah, that whole sort of mystical element, I suppose, as opposed to magical element, becomes increasingly important in telling the story. And because Amaran's a planet rather than just a continent, there are other places I've envisaged where the gods are still very much more actively revered and worshipped, and so on, which again gives
Oh,
me lots
cool.
of options for different storytelling in different
Yeah.
ways. So it's effective. It's a worldwide religion, but people have got very different perspectives over which side of the debate they were on. So effectively, the faction that kind of brought things to a head is, they're referred to as the Avatars of Darkness, the ones that caused disaster. But if you move to another continent in a different setting, so I wrote a standalone book called A Quiet Vengeance. I've not fully explored these concepts yet, but in A Quiet Vengeance, the people of a different race, so it's basically Middle Eastern inspired and North African inspired. In that setting, they fought on the side of the Avatars of Darkness, but they don't call them that because actually they view themselves as fighting against the tyranny. So the Avatars of Light, the northern continent, thinks of as benevolent but ultimately had to be banished. You move to a different continent, they view them as the tyranny and that they had to be overcome, and
Interesting.
kind of explore the fact that they were at two sides but also two perspectives to the conflict, and that's probably going to be the next project, is actually flipping that round and using that other part of the world to tell that other part of the
That's cool.
story in terms of the wider mythology, if I can remember it all, because it's quite complicated. I mean, just tried to say live on recording for the first time ever. I've never really delved into that side of things so far.
I know that feeling, like to have to explain. I have a similar like thing in one of my fantasy settings where I have like the main creator, and then he has like his children, and then once that he let them both have their powers, but they're almost like primordial forces, and like you have like it's that yin and yang concept for me. I always thought was really interesting, and then it's interesting because there's a lot of things I think that. A lot of things that you and I probably both find interesting about that type of concept for writing. So it's interesting how we have a couple of blends there. But yeah, I just think that's really neat, especially if you're looking at, that perspective. R. Verdi and I talked about that, like where stories come from and like a culture, right? Like, and you can actually track, right, where like different gods were cool over here, evil over here, good over here, like that kind of thing. So I always find, or heroes too, right? Which I always find really interesting. Like, how does your enemy see you, right? Pops up a lot. So I don't know. To me, that's just like a really cool concept.
No one ever sits and thinks I'm the baddie, do they? But
Yeah.
even when I've got antagonists, I do very much, there are obviously, Hrothgar faces challenges and he's got his enemies. But, again, people have read as they've been reading the series, they said, oh, I'm really interested what you did with that character because I really hated her in book one. But in book two, I started to feel a bit, bit sorry for her. And, so characters evolve and change. But I think they probably don't. And so, well, all characters go through growth. But I think what you're also, as a reader, you gain a greater understanding of those characters and their depth. And, I don't believe anyone is inherently evil or inherently good. I think most of us are in that gray space. And it's more about the issues come not so much from something being fundamentally evil, it comes from your objectives and goals being opposed. And it's that conflict that that drives most stories, basically, isn't it? When you really
Yeah.
start to think about it. I think if something is a bit too, I think if it's very much seen as, good and evil, that does become a little, you just lose a lot of depth from the story.
Yeah, totally.
I try very hard to make every character rounded from that point of view for those reasons, really, because, like I say, my enemy never will never think of themselves as the evil person, will they?
Yeah, that's like my that was like the thing I'm with this one series I have where it's like it's hard to go that line, right? Where yeah, so but I'm making it so like both the god and goddess, they're like brother and sister, and the goddess, she's like literally it's like wired into them. I saw someone do this a while back, right, where Kevin Hearn did with Iron Druid Chronicles, where like the gods and goddesses, like one of totally blanket right now, but it's one of like the Irish ones, but she like the goddess of death, whatever, like she can't act another way because of how humans, like human perception, gives them power in his series, which is awesome. So I just thought that was so cool, and I was like, oh, what if you have two, like a god and goddess, and like one is like sunlight, light kind of thing, is like really good, but also like can't see how something she does is bad because she just can't, they can't, or like either one, right? Like he, the guy, like he can't see, like they can't see like their flaws essentially. And I'm like, ooh, I was like, that's better than just like straight up good and evil, right? So they're both like, both do the same thing, like where they create this war and they create creatures for the war. And then their dad's like, okay, like enough's enough, like almost destroy the universe. Like you can no longer influence, you can influence humans and other creatures, but you can't straight, put restrictions on things. But it was like, it was kind of, I was like, talking to friends, I was like, well, it seems like, it's these characters are cool. They're like, but the overall, like, because they have like characters, like paladins for both sides, essentially, who can gain the powers and stuff. And my friends are like, the conflict's kind of weak. So I think that's again, right? Even world building, right? Like, they're once your craft increases, I think that you're able to tweak those kind of things. So I just found that interesting that you said that, because I totally get that, because I've had to fix that entire series from just the pantheon and the overarching, like issue perspective. So I totally understand that. So.
Well, world building is really, really important, isn't it? Because I think, and so much of this is like I was actually struggling to explain to you some of the inherent conflicts that are going on in the
But it's
Wiser.
up there.
Well, it's up
Yeah.
there. I didn't have
Hard
to
to
write
explain
much of
sometimes.
that down. And but it definitely it sort of I think as you start with the world building for me, I think you inhabit the world, and that helps you write more realistically. And again, what you're saying there, if that world being a little bit weak or needs more development, it kind of comes across on the page, even if it's only
Yeah.
like few words. It's a really strange thing, but again, that crafting of what the environment you're in to the extent you need it to tell the story makes a
Yeah.
huge difference. And that's that was the good thing that came out of that Trunk novel for me, was actually all that heavy lifting was done in that first novel, to create that setup. It just wasn't telling a good enough story. But actually, it meant
Yeah.
all I needed to do with Hall of Bones was write the story.
Oh,
And it was just all the other stuff was in the box, just ready to be used, which was, it was great.
no, that's really cool. So you said, right, like you have A Quiet Vengeance. I have that book as well. So that's a different part of the world. That actually excites me even more because I just bought it because it was yours. I was like, oh,
Well,
I know
nothing
Tim.
wrong with
Like,
that, Daniel. That's no,
but I
we don't
just,
object
but
to
that
it.
makes me really excited that, like what you said about it. That's why I interview people, right? Because I can't know all these things, through Facebook posts and stuff, even, we're on a lot of, connected on a lot of things together. So that's why I watch podcasts. Be like, why don't you watch some of your podcasts? I'm like, if you had not said that, I wouldn't have known that, until I got to that book. So it's for me, that just went up, up there, with book one in particular, because I'm like, oh, I really want to see, like how these things are similar or different. So that's, with the series. So I think that's really cool. So to me, that just sold that book even more. But I'm
Awesome.
curious, as we're wrapping up here, I'm just kind of curious, so can we expect more from this world in general from you?
Yes, is
Perfect.
the short answer to that. So yeah, series is done, but the world isn't done, definitely. So I think, A Quiet Vengeance was it's designed really to be another entry point to the world of being, I think we give if people have come in that way. And so I think it gives them a very different perspective when they then pick up All the Bones and vice
Oh,
versa, actually.
interesting. Yeah.
So yeah, I'm always interested to know where people start and which book floats the boat, A Quiet Vengeance, it's not going to be a series as such. That was written as a standalone, but the intention is to write more standalones in that space.
Oh,
So a
cool.
bit like in that Job of Crombie when he's followed up the first law with his series, that there's connections in those books, but you could
Yeah.
effectively read them in any order.
Yeah.
Probably makes more sense to read them in the order that were published, but you could skip one, or you could go out of order if you wanted to, almost like treat them as a prequel, for example. That's possible.
Yeah.
So with The Quiet Vengeance, I've got two other standalones I definitely want to write.
Oh, cool.
And all of these books, they use the concept of time in one way or another to sort of tell the story. So in A Quiet Vengeance, it's a dual timeline, which is so effectively with one, so it's a two-handed story in terms of two points of view. Crown Prince Dojan, who's obviously a crown prince and very, very wealthy and privileged. And then you've got Nimsa, who's she's basically a street rat child. And so her story is told from the perspective of just before she's into her teenage years, basically. So, Nimsa's story is told in the past, Dojan's story is told in the present, but Nimsa is also in the present timeline as a totally different person to the person we see in the past. So, telling that story in that way, it creates the inherent question. How is Nimsa in the past timeline now doing the things she's doing in the present
Yeah.
timeline? So I want to play with those kind of concepts a bit more in the sort of quiet vengeance sort of cycle. So I think, Quiet Conquest and A Quiet Betrayal, the two other working titles for the two other books I want to
That's
write.
cool.
One of those, I can probably only do this because I'm indie, but one of those books will tell the story going backwards in time, a bit like Memento,
Oh, that's cool.
From the present day to the past. And I think what I'll probably try and do, I think it needs another storyline that then goes from the past to the present. That will need some serious plotting if I'm to pull that off. But I'm quite looking forward to writing that because I think I quite look forward to the challenge of doing it. And again, using the different setting, moving away from Vikings into a Middle Eastern world. And then the final book, I don't want to say too much because it's a spoiler, but it's about the circular nature of time and how things repeat. So those are two projects that I definitely want to get going. I also write a short story series that you can pick up from a newsletter. So that's called The Wolf Throne. So that's still Viking inspired, but it focuses on a different set of clans who aren't really involved in the main story of Brotherhood of the Eagle, particularly, and they're different, more rooted in magic, basically, than the clans on the sort of the story, the main story focuses on. So that's called The Wolf Throne. And I started that off as the original concept was I was going to write a never-ending soap opera
Okay.
through a newsletter where effectively this clan, this character would be individual stories, self-contained. But I got about nine stories in and realized I was writing a novel without admitting it to myself, basically. But The Wolf Throne, I think, is half written, and I would quite like to. So I'm going to continue to write the short stories from next year. Going to pick that back up again, probably working that alongside probably writing A Quiet Betrayal next, and that's the current sort of set of plans. A bit like you said, I mean, a couple of projects, so you can have a break from one,
Yeah, I
the other,
definitely
and then come back to that other project fresh. I'm also though toying with another. So that this is when I wrote the Anatomy of Fear story, short story contribution for that anthology. I'm wearing the t-shirt, actually. It should really flash up on the screen about an hour ago, shouldn't it? That was set in a different world entirely because I needed a gas lamp setting for that. I am toying with the idea of putting together a novel that potentially is a trad proposition, actually.
Oh, cool.
Going the other way. That would mean though setting aside A Quiet Betrayal, because I can't. I think I'll probably write two projects. I definitely
Yeah.
three. So at the moment, I think the book that's calling to me is A Quiet Betrayal. It's the indie project. But then I've also I am quite. It's quite. There's another half of me that's just saying, give try and expand that Anatomy of Fear story. There's definitely a novel in there too. Completely different for people to read. Maybe that would be appealing.
Oh,
So,
yeah.
to be honest with you, I'm still very much in the mindset of Broken Brotherhood's just done. I kind of need to get over that and have a bit of a rest, if I'm
No,
perfectly
it's fair.
honest.
Yeah, no, totally. Yeah.
And I think yeah, it'll be whatever project grabs me. So it's probably a combination of it might be the Silent Division, which is the follow-up to the Anatomy of Fear story, or it might be a quiet Betrayal. One of those two will float my boat in a very February probably.
Well, that's really cool. Both of those sound awesome. So, whichever way you
Well,
go, I'm
that's the
sure.
problem. I know. I suppose if it was a terrible idea, it wouldn't be tempting, would it? But
No, that's very fair. Well, Tim, thank you so much. This has been awesome. I'm so glad I could finally get you on. Like I said, we've been passing each other for a while. So, last year was nuts for me. So, but I'm so glad that I got back to your guys' region of the world. It took me a while to work it out with work and life and stuff like that. So I have a lot of people, from a lot of different countries, and I don't know. It's cool to be able to talk to people, and even I've had people again from like Alaska and like Hawaii and stuff coming up. So just just getting a different perspective, I think, is really cool. But I'm really excited to read book one. You got me really wanting to put A Quiet Vengeance up even higher now, because I just think it'd be cool to do like a compare and contrast. But yeah, but if there's anything else I can do in the meantime, there's, like I said, there's the Facebook group, stuff like that. Just want to remind our audience, you can find Tim's all this stuff below in the description, whether you're listening or watching this video, this podcast, anywhere. You guys can head right there. Just want to remind everybody to review all the products that you've gotten from authors such as Tim or creators. We have like Ren Girl with the Mark, that TV series. They have like a Kickstarter. There's all sorts of places and people that just need help. And the best way to do is to review those products and rate them. So please, please, please keep doing that. Tim, if you need anything else, my friend, you just let me know and I'll get it done for you. But I'm so happy that book four is now, by the time this interview comes, is out. And congrats on completing this series. And I look forward to going through, because I love Viking fiction, fantasy, or inspired. So I'm not really picky when it comes to that. So, but yeah, other than that, if there's anything else I can do for you in the meantime, just let me know.
That's brilliant, Daniel. It's been a good chat, and appreciate the support. It's much
Anytime.
appreciated.
Yep, anytime. Well, Tim, you have a great rest of the evening, my friend. I know it's late where you're at, but thanks again, and I will talk to you soon on social media, my friend. So thank you
Okay.
so much. Have a good rest of the day.
Thanks, you too. Bye.
Yep, bye.